We've got 20 minutes and to just reflect on the whole day and maybe feedback a little bit from the groups, what came up in the groups. And then we've got some roving mics / talking sticks which we can pass around. We talked quite a bit about, in our group with Anne, we talked quite a bit about authenticity and being true to ourselves and reflecting on this regret of the dying, that this is the main regret of the dying, is not being true to oneself. And the modulation of this in terms of standing out and fitting in, that we modulate this all the time, and that life creates new responses and new situations. So that whatever happens, there is a counterpoint which enables you to take the next step, whatever that happens to be. And this is not necessarily predetermined; it's part of the flow or the play of life. And so we shared a certain amount around that, and also reflecting on our own experiences in that respect. So does anybody like to add anything to that? It was a very nice encounter. Anne, would you like to say anything? Well, it also found that Anne and Phoebe had met each other before in India a long time ago.
Many years ago, which was, we felt we were familiar. I don't know, we seemed to just travel into the different ways in which we felt our wisdom could have meaning, expression, and also support the young, but also be communicated in a way that was fulfilling for us. I mean, it was almost like we could have been at a very lovely dinner party, actually, and having a really good conversation. We went all over the place, didn't we, really?
Yes, we did. And the dog was a very important part of the... who'd like to follow up on that? What about other various groups? Sue?
We were talking about how important relationships are and how being ourselves and the essence of ourselves, but also sense of calling and meaning and purpose through relationships. And I mentioned, which I'd like to mention really, that my mother died when my father was 98. And over 4 years that my father was on his own, between 98 and 102 when he died, he and I established the most wonderful relationship that we'd never, ever had all my life. And I just think, talking about being yourself, I think my father came into his true self and therefore was able to open himself. And he and I just had a brilliant time over those 4 years. So that was 98 to 102. So I just kind of think we just never, ever know what's possible at any age. So that's just something I like to share. Well, I'm hoping I might, you know, make it to over 100 with all my marbles, as my father certainly did. He was very, very much on the ball.
I would just take up on that. I mentioned in, I think, the last gathering, Scientific and Medical Network had, that my father introduced me to the Seth material. And as he was getting closer to dying, he had a reasonably good Sethian perspective on what was going to happen next. And he had a blood disorder similar to leukemia. And it took him around about a year and a half to die, so quite long. He wasn't in any great pain. He just had to go along and have blood transfusions every couple of weeks. But we had many conversations, particularly in the last couple of months. And it wasn't until the last couple of months that I could see his ego drop away. And he became very emotional, in that he believed that he hadn't demonstrated his love for his children in an appropriate way, which is simply to love them unconditionally. He had always imagined that money was an expression of his love, so he would always give money, but that's kind of not what we wanted. And he got very emotional about that, and we had a lengthy discussion about expressing his real love for the rest of his children. And we, apart from that emotional time, we devised a cunning plan for him to come back and tell me that he was okay where he was now, in the transitional area within consciousness, as Seth would call it. And the cunning plan was come up with a code and let me have that code in some form or other after you've gone. We spent about 3 hours trying to devise a code. And then he said, we'll call it today's date. What's today's date? And it was October the 9th. And this was about 18 months before he died. He died on October the 11th. And in the 2 years, well, it's now 2012, so it's now 4 years since he died. And on October the 9th, a year after he died, he stopped my watch on midnight. And the watch was a watch I'd bought, a cheap watch I'd bought in Boscombe when I used to visit him regularly as he was getting close to death. I kind of like watches, but I don't spend too much money because I change them all the time. And that watch stopped. Yes, the battery had run out, but it was on October the 9th.
Thank you. I wonder whether that also relates to what Maggie was saying about empathy, that he started feeling this greater sense of empathy and the need to express love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just added to what you were just saying, one of the things that happened for me when Tim died, which at the time I was in such a distraught state, I took it for granted, but I got this mad idea that I had to write a symphony for him. I've never written music. I've never composed music. I once feebly played the cello when I was a child. But some reason, but Tim loved music. In fact, the last thing he had published was in the Observer Music Monthly about music. He would write music and dance tunes. So I trained, I don't know how I did it, and I did it looking back because Tim was helping me. I trained in Logic on the computer. I don't know if you know, it's a musical composition program. I wrote a symphony, which then got released. You can download it on Amazon and iTunes. And I was writing these strings and things, and then these dance beats would insist on coming in, and I absolutely would rush into that room to start writing music and wrote a symphony. I know because Tim was doing it with me. I can't explain it. I have no idea. I am not an IT expert. How I did it, there's no explanation other than Tim did it with me, because I could not have done it. So
were you
a composer before? No, never written music ever. And then I wrote a symphony.
No, that's just a fascinating story. I'll be one. But so you think that Tim, in fact, was the source of the symphony?
I think basically it was a way for us to be together vibrationally. Sorry. I loved him, and he loved me, and it was a way for us to be together in that first very, very, very intense year. I mean, when you have a child die, it's so profound, and it was a gift. He was with me. I would go in the room. Can't explain it.
That's fascinating. I think you said that, was it his widow he asked to take up painting, was that right?
It was a message she got in Sammy Ings. to take. She trained in icon painting after that. Yeah.
Beautiful. Who else would like to contribute? About anything over here?
Do you want to talk about our group? Okay, well, we were thinking about the actual dying process. And really what Paul said is he joyfully gave up his body. And we were wondering if we could all joyfully give up our bodies. And we were also talking about the preparation that you need to do before death, starting from the very simple things like clearing up your house. But we decided, or I felt that we had decided, that the mental constrictions were one of the most difficult ones to give up. And we were talking a little bit about whether if one had attachments left over, whether this would help or not. Tuvi, you were there, go on.
No, you speak much, much, much nicer than me, so I don't know what to
worry. And the really interesting point for me, listening to everybody, is that attachments seem to be the most difficult things for us to get rid of. And we had a nice example now. He never really loved me in that way. And this is exactly the sort of thing that you come up against when you're dying. So you have to, in fact, do it before you get to that stage. So get your kids in, talk to them, and try and sort it out. And we came up against one of our children who has always been dramatic ever since she was born. And if she hears that anything is wrong with us, she has a near-death experience. And the question was how we could, in fact, have this discussion reasonably, logically, and at a low level of hysteria with her. And we decided that maybe we probably wouldn't.
We also decided that now that she was 50, she probably would actually cope very well without us.
So these were the sort of points that came up. And the other point which came up was, how do you want to be buried? It's a very simple one. Are you going to go for a burial, or are you going to go for a cremation? And then I was talking about what Paul and his family decided to do, or his family decided to. No, Paul decided as well. So he was cremated, and his mother had been cremated. And what Paul wanted was his mother's ashes to be buried with him. And so what Caspian did was he scattered Paul, and then he scattered Paul's mum, and they now rest together like that. And we felt that this would be rather nice. So I've given up my idea of a Scottish burial on some nice top. And so we're going to be mixed together, and we're going to give some to each of the children, one in Japan, one in London, and one in Massachusetts, and that has to be good.
Well, there's a reflection for you. What about over here, Zelda's group and Maggie's group? Any reflections from that?
I'm not sure that I remember everything, really. We talked, Maggie explained more about her relationship with her mother and what happened in the end, and we discussed our attitudes to people with Alzheimer's, and the fact that it's our attitudes really that need to change, because there's an opportunity also for us to be enriched, which actually Maggie covered in her letter as well, in her lecture and her book. And I don't know, would you like to? Because my memory goes, actually. I've taken in so much today. Yeah.
we also, sorry, my voice is really going now, but we also spoke about respecting the where the person is at when dealing with the subject of death and dying. And my father, for example, I knew he didn't want to actually talk about it, but we were able to behave in a way that was appropriate around his, you know, impending death. He knew that he was on the way out. I knew he was on the way out. We were very loving towards each other. It didn't seem necessary to say, you know, you're going to die, or I know you're going to die. And actually, on his last day on this earth, I happened to be with him. He was in Scotland. He was in great form. We had a walk with a wheelchair around the golf practice ground, and he said, come in, have a glass of sherry, you know, which was his way of saying, you know, it's a great day. And at 5 o'clock in the evening, the care home phoned me and said, I think you should come, he's not very well. He wasn't very well, but he was still bright, he was still in good form. And then he went to sleep and he woke up, and I was absolutely shocked. He woke up and he shouted, love! And that was his last word. And 10 minutes later, he just passed over. So, we didn't actually talk directly about death, but we knew, and it was respectful to him to deal with it in that way.
Beautiful. Thank you. We've got time for one more intervention then.
I've been already.
I was quite touched by Zelda telling our group about her father, who had been on about putting up gravestones for his mother and father, probably 50 years beyond. And I thought that was very poignant, and suggested that she takes up that point.
Say something about our group. Well, just about that. Yes, that I think I should try and organise that those headstones are put up, because my mother keeps dismissing it and saying, oh, he's just on about that, you know, all these years later, what can it matter? But I think it is actually important, and some of the talk today, and especially yours, have really made me feel that it is important to honour that and see if I can do something about it. In our group, we had an interesting, like you said, a very, very good, pleasant dinner party as well. We went all over the place. We talked a lot about Alzheimer's. We talked about whether the men in the SMN, because there were two men in our group and then three, have developed their feminine side more and what that might mean. And you talked, I thought you put it beautifully. You said up until, I don't know what age you mentioned, you said, for a lot of my life it was quadriplegic and just functioned from here up. So we're talking about how that differs for men and women. And it was, would you like to add?
Not only of the body, or the physical body, remember? Being a Catholic as well, how then women repress that part as well. And and the balance that needs, because your theme was crony or crone. But we end up talking more about male-female and the balance, yeah?
And also about being boys being oppressed by the sort of big boys don't cry kind of thing, and how painful that can be. That was about it. Anything else, Natalie, you can remember that we talked about?
We talked about a lot.
Yes.
Good. Well, I have this here already. Well, I think we've been on a rich journey together today. We've had inputs from various different perspectives, and we've had a chance, I think, to digest this a little bit, to think about, you know, our own journey. But I feel it's really been a day where both life and death have been affirmed. And the close relationship between the awareness or the preciousness of life in relation to the limited time that we have, at least in sort of what round we're in at the moment, we just don't know. And also humility, that we know some things, but there's a lot of things we don't know. And so we have to go on that journey into the unknown, but with a sense of trust that if we follow our own inner guidance and keep our relationships intact and clear things up, clean things out, declutter, then we'll know that we're on that track, if that's the right expression, it probably isn't. And we've got a little more chance just of creatively dancing into the next phase of our journey, whatever that happens to be. So I'd like to thank everybody for being here today, speakers, those who contributed in the afternoon, Chiara, who's gone back to have a bit of rest, Martin for his logistics, Michelle for helping us with registration, everything. So thank you all very much. And let's just maybe have a moment of silence before we ask, do a phase transition and ask Natalie to talk a little bit to us about her book.